1, Joyce Glover versus U.S. Health Works.
Good morning, Mr. Begler. Come on up.
My name is Robert Owen Begler, counsel for the plaintiff, Joyce Glover, in a age discrimination case. My first time before this court, Seventh Circuit, was in 1977 as court-appointed counsel in a drug conspiracy case before Judge Eshbaugh, and I introduced the concept of narcotics insanity. Now, that didn't go very far, but this case, I think, is a garden variety, generally accepted decisional authority, as well known to this circuit and to both counsel and both parties. And quite simply, the question is, was age a motivating factor in this case? Judge Lee at the district court indicated that the question was, with respect to the direct method, circumstantial evidence, convincing mosaic, whether or not the evidence taken points directly or even raises an inference of discriminatory reason for the employer's action. This is a case that is going to be governed by a reasonable juror. That's the standard that has been set forth in Anderson. That's a concept that's well known in with respect to whether or not you have a district court determination of summary judgment that forecloses a reasonable juror.
But Mr. Begler,
yeah.
Apart from the fact that we know your client's age at the time she is not selected to be the person for these two new centers, and we have the remark about retirement, which actually in some ways one can read as a positive remark, I don't want to lose you to retirement. I am having trouble finding in this record anything that could lead a trier of fact to think that age explained why she wasn't chosen and Becker was, as opposed to all these reasons the company is suggesting.
That's why I tried to portray the evidence within the standard.
I'm trying to portray the evidence, too. Believe, as you well know, we see a lot of cases in this area, and you need to suggest something that would push it over the midpoint.
Okay. And those factors number approximately 10, Your Honor. And that is, number one, we've done uncontested that she was 66 years old.
But nationwide, they were dismissing people of all ages, it seems.
But then you're going to shift into a statistical analysis? But
well,
the decision,
I'm just saying, yes, she's 66 years old, but
she was the oldest person riffed other than a physician in the United States out of 100 center managers. She was the only center manager riffed in the United States. And if the decision maker, as has been admitted by HealthWorks, was her immediate supervisor who was less than 50 years old, and the HRVP who was less than 50 years old, she's a poster child to let a reasonable juror decide whether or not any of these 10 factors indicate that age was motivating.
But we don't know who was retained. We don't know very much about this. I mean, yes, okay, so she's the oldest manager who is terminated in the RIF, but it's the link of her age to the RIF that I'm just having trouble seeing here.
Well, I think that's why we're talking in terms of whether it's one or a combination. I mean,
what is it that, other than the remark about your retirement, what is it that makes you think, or that could make anybody think, that the reason she is selected to lose her job, and of course all RIFs are situations where people who otherwise would have been kept are let go because the company is shrinking to a certain degree. And as I take it, you're not challenging the fact that there was a nationwide RIF that U.S. Health Works engaged in, and these 43 people, or whatever the number was, lose their jobs. All of that's uncontested, right?
Yes, okay. But I am focusing, I think we're supposed to focus on the decision maker. She's the only person riffed in the whole Midwest division out of 8 centers.
But do we know? Apparently most of this company's work is out in California. And
well, they said most of their revenue.
Not their work.
Presumably there are centers then out in California, too. I don't know what to make of the fact that she's the only person in the Midwest. I don't know the size of the Midwest division vis-a-vis the entire company.
Well, it had eight centers. That was uncontested.
Yeah, but they have 400 centers in California. They have two centers in California.
Well, if you have 100 center managers and she's the only one RIFed in the United States...
Well, why isn't this a sex discrimination case then? I mean, you know, she has her characteristics. She's a certain age. She's a certain gender.
But she certainly had no employment performance problem because she received an excellent 2005 employment review. And, in fact, her supervisor's boss sent her a laudatory communication in early 2006. She's ripped 4 months later and says, you did a fine performance in 2005 and we're looking forward to you continuing in that position.
But the issue for the company is we have Becker and we have Glover. And who's going to stay?
No, we have Becker, Glover, and six other center managers in the Midwest.
Well, but I gather there's a proximity issue.
Well, the record shows there's a clinic in Fort Wayne, a clinic in Elkhart, clinic in Muncie, and clinic in Warsaw. Warsaw and Muncie are closer than Elkhart to Fort Wayne. Now, this is the kind of stuff the reasonable juror has to dig into. In this case,
if you can show that there's some reason to think that her age had anything to do with this.
Well, Becker was approximately 40 years old.
To me, you just show somebody's age and then you go to the jury, and I don't think that's what the way.
Well, Kelly Becker was approximately 40 years old. Her two super. The case law, which has been set forth.
She would have had a case if she was 40 years old, if she'd been RIFed instead of Glover. That's the limit for the ADEA.
Well, the point is that...
she would have said, I'm over 40, and therefore I was discriminated against.
Kelly Becker?
Yeah, I mean, if she had been.
But she wasn't. I mean, she was approximately 40. Miss Glover is 66.
But anybody over 40 is within the protection of the ADEA.
I understand, but there's substantially difference in age, and there certainly is 26-year difference between the two. But the cases that have been set forth in the briefs make much analysis of the fact that the decision-makers, and again, this is a Midwest decision with a national HR, but it's a Midwest decision, spends a lot of time talking about the age. What's the inference of the age of the decision-makers? Is it significant younger than the woman? Yes, they were. You know, I didn't understand what the reference was to the statistical matrix for the whole United States and the 41 people. That wasn't first statistically significant at all. Second of all, the decision area is the Midwest region. And we know one thing.
I'm not sure that your opponents would agree with you about that. I think what they're suggesting, whether it's valid or not, is that if this was a RIF, as some maybe are, designed to get rid of the old people because, you know, you want younger people around, the statistics don't bear that out. If you look at the pre-RIF age distribution, the post-RIF age distribution, they're about the same.
Yeah, but my understanding of the case law is you can't use the whole United States as a statistical basis because the decision maker was in the Midwest.
Which is where, so on your theory, you have to show why, even though it was a neutral RIF as a whole, why somebody in the Midwest was out to get rid of an old person
Yeah,
there.
Because that's the decision maker.
I don't see where you have that evidence.
Well, the evidence is uncontradicted. It says in their, it's in the record, it's in their the answers to interrogatories. The decision maker is a 50-year-old person in the Midwest division. Now, we didn't ask who the decision maker was in California or the East Coast.
So your theory is any time the decision maker is younger than the person
no.
you let go, you get to the jury?
I only refer to that as one of the factors because the Seventh Circuit cases refer to that in their analysis. It's in the brief. They say, well, how old was this decision maker? Much younger than the person who was RIFed.
The bottom line would seem to be that Ms. Glover wasn't terminated for... you know, being a poor employee, she was terminated because Ms. Becker's performance was believed by the decision makers to be better.
Well, then you kick into the third step of the pretext argument on the indirect method and look at that very clearly. I put in two factors, at least two factors in my summary of facts that show Ms. Becker's clinic was totally different than Ms. Glover's clinic, Ms. Becker had a much poorer administrative reporting record by 50 to 100% more in errors and deficiencies than Ms. Glover. And those factors, I don't think, can be glossed over by a reasonable juror. They would have an impact upon a reasonable juror. And that's why you can either do it from the indirect method or the direct method.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Eflund.
May it please the Court. Good morning. My name is Matt Eflund, and I'm here representing U.S. Health Works. This case is actually quite simple when you boil it down, as Judge Lee did in his summary judgment order. At the end of the day, Ms. Glover, who was one of 43 individuals RIFed in June of 2006, disagreed with the decision-making process and the decision-making factors by Mr. Arnes and Mr. Foster.
You know, Mr. Eflund, there is at least some evidence that Ms. Glover's performance suffered because her supervisor did not let her fill some open positions that she then had to cover. How do you think a court should evaluate evidence that an employer is partially at fault for creating situations in which an employee is doomed to subpar performance?
Well, in general, the court should review the factors that were actually used by the decision maker, who in this case was predominantly the vice president of human resources based in California and responsible for evaluating the RIF process nationwide. He utilized the resources of his individual regional managers. And to the extent that the regional managers had some effect on the evaluations, well, that's what regional managers are paid to do. They evaluate their staffs. Now, the fact that Ms. Glover may or may not have had issues in specific, unique, narrow areas, those areas did not weigh into the overall issues that Mr. Arnes and Mr. Foster used to evaluate the differences between Ms. Becker and Ms. Glover when the decision on the RIF was made.
But, you know, usually we have all sorts of language that says the relevant time to evaluate a person is at the time the decision was made. We're not going to look at these old performance reviews. Usually it's people who have great performance reviews in the past and who are slipping. Now, she's the opposite story. She had been working, clearly, it seems to me, to improve. She'd had some problems. She starts to get much better reviews. And just when she's really doing well, all of a sudden, you decide that she's the one who has to go. And that's it's a very odd pattern and one that I think requires some explanation.
Well, I'd be happy to explain. Would that it were that Ms. Glover and Ms. Becker and the rest of U.S. Health Works was able to control their state in the economy and how successful the company was overall in the state of the economy. But what is uncontested is the company hit some hard times in 2005, 2006. As Ms. Glover herself stated in her deposition, the hard times started after the September 11th attacks in 2001. And, yes, she was improving. And would she have been fired but for the fact that there was this downturn and the need for this reduction in force and the overall cutting of overhead? No, likely she would not have been. Was she improving? Absolutely. But the problem is for Ms. Glover, is at the time that the decision was made, which was uncontested, that there was no need for two separate center managers between Elkhart and Fort Wayne, that one person could handle both positions, they were left with, all right, which of these two people, when considering the series of factors, would be more likely to serve the company well? And it's uncontested across the board that when you look at the factors that were considered by the company, Ms. Becker comes out on top. She had been with the company longer. She had a greater degree. She had a successful history of managing multiple locations, whereas Ms. Glover had an acknowledged difficulty in running multiple locations. Ms. Becker was running a profit in 2006 at the time that the decision was made, whereas Ms. Glover, her center was not.
But I thought the record showed that the loss of this very important client really had nothing to do with Ms. Glover.
It did not.
So, you know, if that's the reason that her center is less profitable, then why is that attributable to her?
Well, it's not necessarily attributable specific to her in the sense that she articulated or she motivated the specific loss. What is attributable to her is the fact that when you look at all of the factors taken together, which is what the decision makers were required to do, the profitability of the center was one factor among many. And in a purely objective sense, that was a factor that was acceptable to look at in the sense that it, again, has nothing to do with her age. What this essentially comes back to, this entire case comes back to, is was there any evidence offered that her age was a motivating factor? That is the key question in an age discrimination case. And while there are issues that Ms. Glover takes issue with, where she finds it unfair, perhaps, that certain aspects were considered by the company instead of other aspects, where she finds it unfair that someone much younger than her was allowed to retain her position where she was not, where she finds it unfair that the evaluations for her that were improving were nevertheless taken over a 3 or 4 or 5 year context inferior to those of the person who was retained. The fact that she subjectively finds problems with this, that is not enough evidence under the current case law to survive a summary judgment motion. There has to be some evidence that age was a motivating factor, and she simply hasn't offered any. In fact, the statistics that she points to, or the fact that she points to the issue that she was the oldest non-physician employee of the company terminated out of the 43, that actually doesn't help her at all. That supports the company's position that the decision-making process was, in fact, age-neutral. The fact that there were, as I believe it's stated in the briefs, that there were 36 individuals riffed in 2006, in June of 2006, that were substantially younger than Ms. Glover. And of the remaining employees, four of them were still younger than her, and only two were older than her. There is no indication that on a nationwide level there was any type of anti-age animus, and she's offered no evidence whatsoever of the fact that, at the end of the day, the decision was based on anything other than neutral and legitimate reasons. She's offered no evidence whatsoever of age discrimination. Her factors that she points to from the standpoint of circumstantial evidence, none of them, even when taken together, as Judge Lee noted, point towards age as a factor, other than the fact that she recognizes that she's in the protected group and she was let go. That's simply not enough. As far as the indirect burden of proving, the indirect method of proving it, she shouldn't even make it to the pretext argument because she was offered a position, or offered the opportunity, to apply for a position, and she rejected that opportunity, which under this circuit's case law ends the discussion right there. She hasn't met her prima facie case. But even then, she still offers no burden of pretext because a RIF is a legitimate business reason for letting someone go. And if she can't come forward, as she has not, with any evidence whatsoever that age was a motivating factor, then she simply cannot meet her burden, and summary judgment was appropriate. There's no other questions. I'll yield the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, terms are bandied about subjective, objective. That depends on the perspective of the reasonable juror. The four factors are uncontested as presented by the evidence, and those factors were employee performance, and the court has already addressed that issue. Her performance was up here. She got the laudatory communication from the boss's boss, and I think what you need to do is look at, and I've always thought you had to look at the decision maker. They keep trying to look at a universal position, and the decision maker in the Midwest is quite simply one person was eliminated and she was 66. The position held was the second factor that they looked at, and they were both clinic managers, so that there was no difference between those two. Tenure. Ms. Glover had, the record is uncontradicted. She was the center manager for 8 years. Ms. Becker had 14 years, but it doesn't say how long she was the center manager in the record. So that is not dispositive. The fourth position, the fourth factor that they said they used to do this nationwide RIF was position necessity within health work. Well, Why not eliminate all the positions like they did in the Tubergen case and then bring them back? Why not level the playing field from the very beginning? That's where the inference comes that a reasonable juror needs to explore. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both Mr. Whitley, I'm sorry, Mr. Vegler and Mr. Epland. And the case will be taken under advisement. And